All right, I would like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10 and will then answer any questions from the audience. Let's all welcome Ryan.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ryan, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really, really grateful for being here, and thank you, Mike, for asking me. And I haven't really been to a Sunday morning meeting in a long time, and I haven't been in this room for quite a while, so it's pretty awesome to be here. I got a sobriety date of March 13, 2007, 23 years old, so I got sober when I was 18, and I got to say my life is a lot different today than it used to be, for sure. I've been thinking about that a lot because I've recently, there have been some really close people to me. A guy who's got multiple years of sobriety, whom I looked up to when I first came in, who recently went out and got drunk, and another friend of mine who's got 4 years of sobriety, and I got to see him come in, recently went out and got drunk. So kind of like when those things happen to people that you don't think it'll happen to, it kind of makes you look inward, you know? Give you a little brief background of who I was before I even started drinking. I always had friends. You know, I always had a group of people who liked me. I was pretty well liked, but I always felt alone. I was almost drowning in my insecurities always, you know, and I'm always thinking about what you're thinking about me. I could kind of sum it up like, you know, I remember in seventh grade, I had this bowl cut, you know, and I hated it, but I was so scared to cut it for like fear of like it'll maybe would look worse, so I would keep it and I would just hate it. And I, you know, you'd walk by all the same people when you're going class to class, and I would always see this one girl that I wanted to talk to, but you know, I would always run through my head all the ways it could go down, and every single one I would fail, so I never would do it. And that's just like where I was living, you know, in my own brain, so, you know, I have addictive personality ever since I was a young kid. I mean, whether it's getting like a perfect attendance award for going to school, you know, and never being late and stuff like that for like 3 years straight when I was in second grade to fifth grade, or, you know, just loving a skateboard. So I'm like, you know, at the skate park from dawn till dusk, you know, and skating so hard that I'm like not getting brief moments away from my own head. And then finally, skateboarding leading me to breaking my ankle really, really bad when I was 12 years old and getting taken to the hospital and getting a big shot of morphine on the way over there and getting sent home with, you know, some outside issues and 2 weeks off of school and both my parents working. And then, alcoholism and addiction starts from the get-go, you know. I'm one of those, I learned very early on that rather than taking things as prescribed, I can, you know, take a little bit more at shorter durations of time, and not only will the pain go away, but all those, like, those things in my head go away too. And I remember, you know, when I finally went back to school, I'm hobbing around on my crutches, and that one girl that I was always scared to talk to, I'm all like loose and I'm like, hey, yo, what's up, you know? And I had arrived, you know. I look back, I remember when I read Bill's story, I was like, that's it, you know. And I spent no time, you know, learning to drink too. And you know, my life was, I was on a quest for cool, you know. I wanted to be the life of the party. I wanted to be like these guys I saw that were, you know, a few years older than me who were doing things and hanging out with hot girls, and like, I wanted that life. And, you know, I look at it a lot like, you know, a saying we have in AA, you know, if you want what we have, do what we do. And I wanted what they had, so I did what they did. And, you know, and the funny thing was is, you know, I ended up getting everything that I wanted, you know. But sure enough, it ended up not being what I wanted in the end. But, you know, when I was in high school, I went through and, you know, I'm kind of grateful for this too. I went and did every outside issue you could do as well, you know. And I went through all these different phases, and I remember, I mean, I was an addict towards all of them, you know. And I remember when it would be like I would slow down doing something and start doing something else. I'd have to let everyone know that I was slowing down to something else. And people were like, why are you even doing that in the first place? Like, and, you know, I was so proud of myself, you know, and just insane. And I got into some trouble, you know, and I remember I went to my first meeting when I was 13. And I was at the Costa Mesa Alana Club. And that was like my first of many, you know. And I came back to these rooms when I was 16, you know, and I got an MIP, you know, trying to hide from the police. And I like ditched all my beer, but I had like a beer right in this front pocket. So I get up to talk to them, like, hey, I got nothing. And then they like point to this and call me an idiot. And, you know, and you know, that's my life. And I was on a search for fun. And I'm not going to lie to you, I had a lot of fun, you know. I say this, if like there was not any of the harsh consequences and that deep, deep emotional pain involved with what ends up happening to us, I'd still be doing it because I had a great time, you know. But that became my life. I remember my nickname's Bud, and so you can also get an idea of what I like to do on the side as well. But I remember, like, I was so wrapped up in who Bud was. I mean, like, this, like, I totally was a different person. I wouldn't even answer to Ryan. You know, some people would call me by my real name, and I would not even answer. And I look back at that today, and I'm like, wow, that's kind of gnarly. But pretty much, you know, I did everything that you could do, and I had a lot of fun. And, you know, I got to a point, though, where, you know, when you're drinking so much and you're doing all these outside issues, you know, first and foremost, your brain is getting connected to all these things. And when you stop giving your brain what your brain's getting used to, things happen, and sometimes they're not pretty. And I stopped doing something that I really, really enjoyed doing. And I went through a very, very heavy depression. I was out of high school. It was right when I started college over at OCC. I mean, I always had the potential, all my teachers said, to get into a really good four-year. But, of course, I got all Ds. I should have got all Fs, but I sweet-talked my way into getting all Ds and passing high school. So I was at OCC, and I was in a serious depression, and I was isolating, and I would sit in my room and I would like contemplate, you know, killing myself. And I remember, like, I'd be driving down the 55 freeway and I'd start just hitting it, going like 90, and I was just like just about to just turn the wheel as hard as I could. But I was too much of a wimp to do that. And I remember sitting there, you know, finishing fifths of vodka and not being okay. Couldn't walk, you know, but not being okay up here, and I wish that upon no person, you know. You know, of course, I found a secret formula of a slew of different substances that kind of like defeated that depression. And I went on my last, it was like a 2.5 month just massive run where I was literally insane. And I thought that I was the reincarnation of Mozart, and that, you know, like I was world famous and I had a TV show, and I was in that, I thought I could like send messages to people telepathically. And I was just like insane. And I ended up on January 8th of 2007, I got a DUI right in front of the Goat Hill Tavern in Costa Mesa. My buddy kept telling me, you know, I just picked up some outside issues. My buddy kept telling me, you know, you should take the side streets home. And I was, you know, my ego was so big. I was like, what's the shortest distance between point A and point B? You know, straight line. So I take Newport Boulevard and I get pulled over on the two busiest streets, you know, Newport and Harbor. And you know, the jig was up. And they found the outside issues and had a felony charge, and, you know, I went to jail. And I could say it was like somewhat of a relief because I didn't know. I mean, I believe, you know, if I would have kept going, I don't think I would have been here. And it wouldn't have been like, I wouldn't have done something extravagant and like wrote a suicide letter or something like that. I probably would have just pulled a Heath Ledger and took too many substances and just slipped away and didn't wake up. And I remember the big badass alcoholic I was, you know, calling mommy to please help me get out of jail. And I spent 5 days and that was enough. And, you know, and she bailed me out. And, you know, there's a little period of time, you know, from January to March when I got sober. And that was when I was dabbling with, you know, drinking's not my problem, like all this other stuff is, you know, smoking weed's not my problem, all this other stuff is. And, you know, what I've come to understand is, you know, where we end up when we stop this journey of our alcoholism is, you know, doing stuff like, for me, just drinking, that gets me here, you know, and maybe smoking a little weed, but that gets me here. But all the stuff that I like to do gets me here. And this is always in the back of my mind. I always know it's there, and it's never going to go away. And this is just not good enough, you know. And I learned that the hard way, and I ended up getting my ass kicked one more time on March 12th, 2007. And I wanted, you know, because I was going to AA because I had to, and I got a big book. Or my dad bought me a big book and gave it to me on my 16th birthday and told me that I would need it. And looked at him crazy, but that was the first big book that I got into. And I got a sponsor because it looked good, you know. Never called him. And I wanted to prove to you guys that I could, you know, I heard that one spot about, in the book about, you know, go to the nearest bar room and, you know, get people to tip their hat to you and prove, you know, and so I go and try that. I wasn't 21, so went over to my buddy's house and I failed miserably. And I remember, like, I don't know what was different as I woke up that next morning and I had been defeated, and it was on a Tuesday. And Tuesday just so happens to be, you know, when my home group is, you know, so Tuesday night men's stag in Huntington Beach. And I went in there with my tail in between my legs. And if anyone who saw me when I first came in before this, I had my Ray-Bans on, you know, in the meeting. I have like my fedora hat, and I wasn't an alcoholic. My name wasn't Ryan. My name was Bud, and I was an acid drop, a dope fiend. And I wanted to be unique and different, you know, and I came in March 13th with my tail in between my legs, and I had been defeated, you know, and I was scared because for some reason, I just knew. I was like, man, I cannot survive. I can't survive without substance. I can't survive without alcohol. I can't do anything. I can't go to the mailbox, you know. I can't walk like 5 feet out in front of my house without, you know, doing something to be okay. And that scared me because I did not know how to live sober, but I could no longer live getting, you know, drunk and loaded anymore. And I also knew that, you know, I have a couple friends right now who are spending time in our wonderful correctional facilities who were just like me. And I knew that I get in trouble with the police every once in a while. I don't know about you guys. Like, I go like a few months and I get in trouble, you know. And if you're on felony probation, they just send you back to jail, you know. And I knew that that would be my route. So, you know, I went in and I cornered my sponsor. I like what this guy had to share. So I like cornered him in the room. He told me later he was kind of frightened. And I was like super like sporadic. And I like was just, so I'm like talking really fast. And I'm like, you know, cornering this dude about this far away from his face. Like, hey man, I really like what you had to share, you know. And you know, I want you to be my sponsor and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And the guy goes, if you just take a couple steps back, I will sponsor you. And that started my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I spent no time getting into those steps. The way I've looked at it was, you know, and what my sponsor always says, your life's in a state of emergency. And, you know, I worked the steps like my life was in a state of emergency because it was. Like my life depended on it because it does. And I, you know, I remember when I finally felt some relief, because I would ask him, you know. I mean, I would go home, I would go to college, I'd go to all my classes, then I'd have like a few hours in between till I go to a meeting, and I'd like sit on my hands and I would cry because I just was like, for fear of picking up my phone, I deleted all those numbers that I was supposed to delete, but I like knew them in my head, you know, for fear that like I would go on autopilot and like do something stupid. And you know, and it was scary. And I remember asking him, like, will this ever get better? And he goes, just keep working the steps, and I promise you it will. And I was dumb enough to believe him. And sure enough, I'm really glad I was. And you know, for some reason, I just realized, like, I could take the easy way out and feel good right now, but I will feel as shitty as I do sometime in the future. And I could either get through it now, or I'll just have to get through it later, or I might not ever get the opportunity to get through it. And for some reason, that was just always in my head. So I kept trudging along, and I worked that four step, and I wrote down all my deepest and darkest secrets, and I shared that with, you know, my sponsor. And the day after I did my fifth step, I felt some comfort in my own skin. You know, it was for a brief moment, but I felt comfortable in my own skin. And that's all I really ever wanted. You know, that was the reason why I drank. It's the reason, you know. And, you know, I remember when I first started doing step work with him, he had me write a list of all, like, the good and bad things alcohol and drugs done for me. You know, so I had this huge list of all this bad shit, thinking it's going to be about that. But, you know, he goes, let's just rip that and throw that away. And it was all about the good stuff, you know. Make me able to talk to girls, you know, like befriend, you know, make friends with people, feel confident in my ability to do things, you know. And I had like a list of 5 or 6 things, and he goes, I promise you, by the end of these, end of this step work, you'll be able to do all this stuff stone cold sober. And today I can tell you that's the reason why I'm still sober today. Point blank, period. If I wasn't having a better life today than I was when I was getting loaded, I would not be here, you know. I mean, I remember my 21st birthday, I was doing a panel, you know, and I was talking to some kids because I got kicked out of high school, and, you know, I went and did an aversion program at Jade and Second Chance, and, you know, some of my friends are the people who run that, and I remember back then, you know, they were just like, you're going to graduate to bigger and better things, and, you know, what they were meaning was things like jail cells and stuff, and they just, like, let me go. I was like one of the worst kids they have like ever seen, they said. And they're like, you just go, like, we'll sign off all your paper, you know. And like, I mean, I did everything I was supposed to, but, you know, and the funny part is I did graduate to bigger and better things. And I ended up seeing one of those people who were running that place at the time at a meeting. And I started going back and speaking with those kids, you know. And man, dude, it's just a trip. And you know, that's really, really cool. You know, my life with my family, my mom who told me that, you know, for 2 years, for like a solid 2 years, she would just, you know, she'd find me out in front of my car with my car on, you know, put in park, the windows down, the music's blasting, and I'm just passed out in the front seat, you know. She, you know, she'd hear like banging around in my room in the middle of the night, and like, sure enough, I wake up and, you know, I'd like tried to rip off my toilet seat, and like paintings are on the ground, and like, you know, just, she'd get calls from people like, you know, or she tried to find me and I'm supposed to be at work, you know, and my phone's off and none of my friends, all my friends have to tell her is the last thing he said was he was going to the forest, you know. And there is no forest in Costa Mesa. So my mom's just, and I, you know, I'd stroll in like a day later, you know, and like nothing happened. And that poor woman, like, and the things I would say, I remember, you know, it's like today I've done so much to rebuild that relationship. But I remember just like the things that I would say to my parents, you know, were just horrendous. And it's kind of gnarly, but, you know, today I have a really, really great relationship with both of them. You know, my dad was 24 years sober, and I say was. So when I was new, I got the opportunity, you know, that's why he bought me the big book, he knew. You know, one of the most spiritual men I've, you know, luckily, and it's crazy, he's my dad, you know. So I got to go to the meeting before the meeting, you know, the meeting after the meeting, and then I got to go home, and he would teach me more about, like, life and cool shit about the universe and stuff like that, and, you know, all these mystical, you know, mystic religions and all this cool stuff. And, you know, I've got to learn a lot through this man, and, you know, but he made the decision a few years ago to go take a drink, and, you know, it hasn't been too pretty, you know, and I've been there as a son, and that was something really, really tough to go through, you know. And the truth is like, I remember, like, I wouldn't say hate, but it's kind of gnarly to me, but it's just something that I had to do. I had to be okay with, you know, the fact that maybe one day I would, you know, go over to the house, because he lost his job, and, you know, luckily he was able to get some Social Security, but, you know, go over there and he might not be alive anymore, you know, and I've kind of come to the grips with that, and, you know, which is, it's kind of gnarly, but what it allowed me to do. And I remember a guy that I really, really respect told me, he goes, it's not about him, He goes, none of this is about him. He goes, you have to ask yourself, do you want to continue a relationship with your father? And if the answer is no, cool, let it go, you know. But if the answer is yes, what are you willing to do to make that relationship better, you know? And so it's cool. Me and my dad have a really, really cool relationship, and he looks at me as one of the only people he can really talk to, and I'm really grateful for that. You know, I haven't been perfect in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have fumbled many, many times, and I have fallen on my face many, many times. You know, the one thing I haven't done is take a drink or a drug. And, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. It's the one thing that I've become very, very good at is whether it's leaps and bounds and huge strides or whether it's literally inch by inch by inch, I have learned to continue to push forward. It's the one thing that I've learned to do. Just push forward. In between my fourth and fifth year, probably around like 3.5, my life was really, really bitching, you know. I had gotten all these gifts, and I remember, you know, I had the girl, I was making all the money, and I was doing all these stuff that I loved to do, and I remember I started to slowly but surely, it's very, very subtle, stop doing the things that got me all that stuff in the first place. And I just remember, you know, all of a sudden I'm, you know, coming up on my fifth birthday and I'm going to one meeting a week. I'm not sponsoring. I'm not seeking to go out and help any guys. You know, when people would call, I'm not picking up the phone. I'm not calling people back, you know. I kept praying, but I don't know if I was feeling it, you know. I'm not reading the book. I'm not really working with my sponsor. And I just remember, like, I felt more broken then than I had when I was brand new, than I had when I was, you know, out there at the end of my alcoholism. I for some reason, luckily, I just knew that the solution is sometimes you just don't ask questions. You figure all that shit out later. You just start doing again, you know? You just start doing all the stuff you did in your first year again, you know? And you know, I'm really, really grateful to say that, you know, my life is even a lot different from then than it is now. And, you know, I'm back to a healthy amount of meetings. And, you know, the funny part is once you really open yourself back up and start doing the footwork again, you know, everything just starts flooding back in, you know. Got guys asking me to sponsor them, and, you know, I'm taking them through the steps, and, you know, it's just, and I'm talking with my sponsor, I'm working through some stuff, and, you know, and every part of my life is, again, better, you know. Because really what kind of spawned me having the epiphany was, you know, I'm a hip-hop artist, I was going to school, and I was in college, and I made the decision to, I had a 3.86 GPA, and I made the decision to drop out to pursue a dream. And I thought it would be like, I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to, like, get huge and get, you know, big off making my music in, like, one semester and this and that. And, you know, that hasn't been the case, but I'm getting closer and closer to that dream. But the biggest thing that I remembered was, you know, the feeling of that fear of financial insecurity that it talks about. I was so terrified. I mean, I had money in the bank, but I was so terrified to spend anything because if I would spend this right now, then I wouldn't be able to do this in the future. And then, like, so I would, like I had, like, some health issues going on. Like, I had a hernia that I had to get fixed. I had to get my wisdom teeth pulled for, like, a year and a half. And I wouldn't do these things because I was just, like, so terrified, you know, of, like, not being able to, like, make things happen. And I wasn't making anything happen because I was so terrified, you know. But I remember just being like, this fear of financial insecurity also means that I do not believe I'll be successful, you know. They go hand in hand. And so I remember to defeat that, and this was like the beginning of, like, revamping my sobriety, was I remember I had to go, like, make a purchase, and I had to go, like, spend, like, a, like, you know, for me, you know, I had to go, I I ended up buying my girlfriend a brand new camera, and I had to do something just to, like, and I remember just to, like, break the cycle and just be like, it'll be okay. Money comes, money goes, you know. If you stay doing what you're supposed to, God takes care of you. And I remember I'm shaking as I'm giving the Best Buy guy my card, you know. And and it was really cool, though, you know. And all this other stuff spawned from that, because I started, why is this fear here, you know. And it's really, really cool. And, you know, I've gone through some pretty shitty stuff, you know, with my music. I was working with this company, and I had to learn the hard way the shadiness of people in the music business. And so I'm going through some stuff right now that ended up getting a little legal, and I'm dealing with it. You know, it's really unfortunate, and I really want to hit this dude in the face, but he's in Brooklyn, and so I'm glad he's in Brooklyn. You know, but I've wanted to, you know, hurt people or hurt him, and that's not good either. But just being honest, you know, and something, you know. But the cool part is you know, I get with all that happening, you know, I just stayed open. You know, I just stayed open and was like, you know, there's some reason for this. I don't know what it is yet. I don't like what's going on, but there's some reason for it, and I'm pretty sure one of these days I'll figure it out. And still really haven't figured it out too much, but being open, I've, you know, just being open and continuing to pursue and move forward, like I was saying, whether it's an inch or whether it's big, long strides, you know, new opportunities come, you know, and I've gotten some new opportunities, which is just awesome. And, you know, something else recent is, you know, I'll share two things and I'll be quiet. I remember, you know, talking about Alcoholics Anonymous and God, you know, and I found a God in here that I never thought existed, you know, of my own understanding. And, you know, I was one of those dudes who would say I was an atheist, but I didn't even really know what the word meant, you know, just egotistical to the core. But I remember, you know, there was this one amends that I had to make. You know, it was right before I got sober, right before I got arrested. I was in this English class. And I would come in there reeking of tequila, you know, at like 11 in the morning. And I would just start spewing stuff, you know, like just telling the teacher that she's wrong and this and that. And I remember I ended up having to drop the class because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't well equipped to finish, you know. And I remember they had, my friend was in the class too, and he told me that they had a discussion about how nice it was that I had dropped. And, you know, I remember when I got sober, that was one of those things that, like, I felt so ashamed about, you know. And, you know, I was always scared to go, like, talk to this teacher, right? And just, like, it was one of those amends that I was really fearful to go make. And, you know, I got the opportunity through school and through just being open. I was taking this world religions class, and I ended up going to spend a weekend at this Buddhist monastery. So I'm, like, hanging out with all these, you know, it was awesome. And I felt super, like, spiritually charged, and I remember, you know, coming back to school, and my class ends up getting canceled, so I'm walking around campus, and I'm like, I'm going to go talk to this teacher right now. So sure enough, I go over to her office, and, you know, backtrack a little bit. I had written an essay probably 6 months before that to try to get a scholarship, and I just basically wrote my story. And so I go into this lady's office, and I tell her, you know, about what I'm about to do, and she goes, that's funny, I've been waiting for you to come in here. And I'm all like, what? And she tells me that she was on the scholarship committee, and she read my essay, and she knew, you know, where, even from the point in, you know, from where I was in that class, where I went, you know, and just talk about things coming full circle. And that was pretty freaking cool. And, you know, the last thing is my lease where I was living had ended or ends tomorrow. And I didn't find a new place to live. I was trying to find, you know, spots recently, and I had this one place, and it totally fell through. So I'm, like, kind of just cruising around, like, oh, I'm not really going to worry about it. I'm just going to, like, you know, put my shit somewhere, and I'm just going to kind of float around this and that. My mom's all worried about me, and, you know, and the funny thing is, you know, just being like, hey, you know, everything will work itself out. Literally 2 days ago, a buddy who I'm trying to move in with goes, hey, I found this spot. Check it out. Call the dude. The dude, we look at it, you know, and literally in 24-hour time span, you know, I get my credit report, which I have great credit. You know, I got a 720 at 23. I was like, wow, that's pretty awesome. And you know, and answer all these questions. He calls all my references and, you know, nothing but good stuff. And I'm like, wow, that's not like me, you know. And, you know, and I moved in all my stuff yesterday. And how cool is that? I'm like, you know, everything works out right in the nick of time. And, you know, that's how Alcoholics Anonymous is for me, is I have been able to just put one foot in front of the other and continue to work, you know, and try to just continue to get closer to God in every way that I can. And I fall on my face a lot, but, you know, with the help from you guys, and anything's possible. And if you're new or fairly new or thinking about being new, you know, a lot of times I remember I looked at people online with this, is just, you look at people and you're like, they're special, I'm not. I'm never going to be them. I'm always going to be me in this shitty situation that I'm in. You know, and the secret is if the secrets, I don't know where they are, but the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're usually on the wall, and you're like, the secret's out, you know, it's right there, you know? And if you just do that, and I just did that, and my life's pretty bitching today. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Okay, Ryan, it looks like we have some time for question and answer period. So, you want to step back up? Sure.
All right. My name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. Are there any questions?
Hey, Ryan. I've seen you at meetings, and I see that you work with young guys program. Is there anything different about young people trying to get sober as opposed to, I know it's your experience, is there anything you need to challenge about that?
I've actually thought about this a lot, and it's totally different. I personally think it's a little bit more difficult for young people to get sober, but I think it's like straight, the mind works in habits, you know, and like getting sober at, you know, 18 or younger, you've only been having certain habits for only a certain amount of years, and that's what's difficult. I see for friends of mine who are a little bit older than I am, is those, they just have those habits for longer and longer and longer, you know, which are, you know, habits die hard, you know. So I think the biggest thing is, I was just talking to Judy about this earlier. For me, it was changing the definition of fun. It's as simple, but it's kind of difficult at the same time. But what I think people, guys that I know who have been in and out for years, you know, friends of mine who I grew up with, it's just, in their mind, if they're not, like, at a party, like with a drink in their hand, you know, or doing whatever they like to do, surrounded by that atmosphere, they're not having a good time. And they always think that. And the fact that they think that is, you know, this and coming to meetings, you know, like you always hear, like, there is a solution, but, you know, the bad part is this is it, you know. I don't look at it that way, but, you know, some people do. And I just had to change the definition of fun, and it was as simple as, you know, when I'm spending time with people that I enjoy spending time with, I'm having a good time. So that could be doing anything. That could be sitting in a meeting, you know, laughing, you know, out at coffee, watching a movie, going to a concert, doing anything. I'm having a good time. Having a conversation, you know, I'm having a good time. And, yeah, I hope that answered it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've thought about that a lot, too. That part in the book where if you're coming with a purpose, you can go anywhere that a free man can go. And that is always in my head about, like, why I'm there, you know, why I'm there. And I have. I've played at many places in L.A., around in Orange County, and been surrounded by guys who were like, hey, man, like, hit this, you know. It's just, it really hasn't been a big deal. But any time that I feel off inside, first thing I do is I call my sponsor and I try to figure out what's going on, you know? So I don't know. I don't like to think about that too much, but I know that if I stay on fit spiritual ground, I'll be all right. Goose. In all honesty, recently I've been so busy that I don't have any time to be bored. But I'm one of those, I like to just start new things, you know. To me, there's always something new to do if you're willing to, like, go out and find it, you know. One of the things I learned early on is, I mean, I was really, really lucky with already loving music and loving creating music. And there's something really special about when I am by myself, I got a beat playing, I got my pen in hand, I got a piece of paper in front of me, and I start writing a song, and, like, literally it's just, like, direct connection, you know, direct connection with the infinite. And I'm just like, but what I've tried to say is there's always something that people like to do, and at any given moment, you know, if you like, I had to write down, like, I remember, you know, what are five things that I like to do? And if I remember, like, don't have anything going on, I can do one of those five things, you know, and I'll be all right. And some of it's by myself, some of it's with people. I guess it's always, for me, it's always being open to, like, start new things. And, like, in all honesty, I mean, I've been so busy that when I get a free moment, I like to just sit back and, you know, watch some TV or something, you know, and hang out. But I think the biggest thing is what I've seen with my friends, and I try to, like, pull them out of it or whatever, but just they get bored and then they stay bored, you know, versus trying to, like, go out and do something positive. Period. Really comes, always to me, it always comes back to, like, how willing are you to, like, not be bored, you know, and how willing are you to, like, stay sober, you know, rather than making that decision. You know, that's what it's always come down to. I see too many of my friends who, like, keep saying that they want sobriety, you know, but in reality, they just don't want it to suck. You know, they want to still be able to go out and do what they do, and they just don't want it to suck, you know. And until, like, I was willing to give up, you know, even all the great times for something new, I don't think I would have been able to make it. Cool.